the day, the big search engine, go to it, was Yahoo. That was the first search engine to show up. And then along came the gorilla called Google, and they vanquished Yahoo pretty much. I mean, it's still around, but Yahoo looked like it was going to be the thing until Google came along and destroyed it, obliterated it. And as soon as Google came along, here's what happened. Everything else started to go away. So you started to lose your CompuServe and your America Online and all of that, and it just started to vanish, right? So now you're down in Google's at the center of it. Okay, so then the next thing. Oh, yeah, we just gave it away. Who had one of these? Who had a Palm Pilot, okay? This was amazing technology, right? This was your calendar in the palm of your hand. This was, you could, and in fact, if you had an upscale, you could connect your calendar to the World Wide Web. I mean, we look at this and laugh at how primitive this was, but do you remember what a breakthrough the Palm Pilot was? I never had a Palm Pilot. I jumped from whatever I was using. I did have a little electronic calendar thing, but I jumped from that to a Trio. A Trio was a phone and you could do email on your Trio. I remember getting off an airplane in Houston, answering email as I was walking down the jet bridge and going, this is the greatest day of my life because I'm able to do this. I mean, I thought the world is changing around me. So yeah, that was my Trio. Looked like that. So you went from the Palm Pilot to the Trio, and then the Trio got upgraded to the Blueberry or Blackberry or whatever berry it was. And that was the hot thing in the day. And then all of a sudden, those all went away because we said hello to this, right? And when the iPhone came along, it was a game changer for us from a media standpoint. And it has changed communication, interpersonal communication, but it's also changed media communication in a huge way. So now jump back to that media pyramid that we were talking about. So back in 1992, this is all there was. Today, and our numbers are a little jumbled at the top. I'm not sure how they got jumbled. But if you go to 2018, where we are today, and you said, how are people utilizing media today? Don't put it up yet, but there are two things that people are doing more than listening to radio and more than listening to TV. So if you had to guess, what's one of the two things that people do more than they listen to radio or more than TV? What would one of them be? What? Podcasting? What else? YouTube. Okay? Let me show you what the two things are. Put them up. Using their smartphone to make calls or text messaging. Text messaging is the most dominant media thing today. So more people today will send a text message than will listen to the radio. But here's what's interesting. Radio and TV are still right there at the base of this pyramid. The things that we think of and talk about, podcasting and YouTube and social media, all of that, it's present in the media landscape, but radio and TV continue to be dominant players in that. Now, here's how that goes on. So from smartphone and texting, you build out, we do have, just show them all the pictures. Do we have the picture of all of this stuff? Yeah, never mind. So you've got that's the one I was looking for. That one that just shows all of the gadgets that are now a part of the media landscape. Okay, now go back to my pyramid, and you got TV and video at the bottom. And then you add to it social media and using a tablet. So 86% of people will do something on social media today, and 67% are using a tablet like I'm using up here. Keep going. Streaming video is 63%. Connecting the phone to the car is 61%. Now that's interesting because you might go, well, my phone automatically connects to my car. Cars work on an 8-year cycle. So people who are driving cars today, more than half of the people don't have the technology to connect their phone to their car. Things we take for granted if you got a newer car, they don't have a USB port and they don't have Bluetooth in their car. In fact, some of them still have an ancient CD player in their car. So there you go, right? Move on up the pyramid. Then you've got streaming audio and radio music or apps. Then you've got smart TVs and MP3 players like the old iPods were. Then you've got podcasts that are 22% of the population and what's called the connected car, which is a card that's actually connected to the internet via wireless. And then you've got the next thing, smart speakers and satellite radio down to 16-15%. And smart watches are starting to come on. And then HD radio is at the very top of the pyramid. Now, the things that have stars by them there, smart speakers, podcasts, radio music apps, streaming audio, and streaming video. The reason those have stars by them is they're accelerating at a higher speed than normal. Those are the stocks to buy today because they're increasing at a faster rate. This is how people are interacting with media today, but those are the things that are expanding going forward. So does that surprise you? What on that pyramid surprises you the most? Anything? Anybody? Yeah, what? Yeah, so we're thinking everybody's using social media, but what we got to recognize is that within a broader population, we think so because the homogenous people with whom we interact are all on social media, but there's a part of the population. There are folks in rural America who aren't on Facebook. Now, one of the things I will confess to, Marianne always gets embarrassed when I confess to this, but I'm an online stalker of people. Like, so if I get your name, I go home and type it into Google and see what I can find out about you on the web. And we're planting a new church in Little Rock, and so I'm stalking the people who live around the church. I'm getting their names and I'm typing them in and finding out what I can find out about them. And I'm expecting that you can type in anybody's name and you can get a Wikipedia page about them, right? Or you can get all their information. There are some folks who just aren't connected. We think it's normal, and it is for our peers and for our homogenous group, but not everybody's doing Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. So it is a surprise to me as well, but it's increasing. It's growing. Anything else that's an observation about the pyramid?
AM, FM radio is still
a lot of people are really shocked at the fact, because there's this perception, radio and TV are dying things, like they're going to go away, which, by the way, was the perception when TV came on. Everybody said, well, that's the end of radio. And then when the cassette player came out, everybody said, well, that's the end of radio. Who's going to listen to the radio when they can pick whatever music they want to listen to? They can do their own playlist right there on the cassette, right? And then satellite radio, and people said, well, nobody's going to listen to local radio now that they can listen to satellite. And radio has continued to transform itself and continued to be something with which people connect. I watch my kids who would say, I don't listen to radio much, but then they stop and think about it. Oh, well, I do listen to it here, and I do listen to it there. It's just so much a part of the rhythm of their life that they use it without thinking about it. And here's what I've found as we've had these conversations with people in the radio world. There are days when I will get in my car and I've got a 20-minute drive and I'm thinking, I want to listen to this specific piece of audio on my phone in these 20 minutes, and so I'll punch it up and I'll do it. And it takes me 30 seconds, you know, to get it punched up and get it listened to. But there are more days than that when I get in my car and I just don't want to think about it. I just want to push a button and have you play something that I want to hear. And that's still the default for in-car listening. In fact, go to the next slide. So this shows how radio is being listened to, and 70% of radio listenership is happening in the car. In the radio business, we like to think cars are really just radios on wheels. That's how we look at it, right? And 70% of people are listening to AM, FM car radio when they're driving. 13% are listening to Sirius XM or satellite radio as they drive. 8% are listening to the music that they're picking through Spotify or Pandora or their own curated playlist. And then when you look at audiobooks or other, look at streaming audio or like Pandora station apps. And then podcasts are 3% of what people are listening to as they're driving around right now. Now, again, you may think, because we're hearing a lot about podcasts and people are saying, are you listening to these podcasts? Podcasts are growing. We'll see that in a minute. But most people who are driving on the right of you and the left of you, if you're listening to a podcast, the guy to the right of you and the guy to the left of you is listening to his radio station. That's what's that?
It's free.
Yeah, it's free and it's easy. So let's talk about podcasts. So here's what the podcast universe looks like right now. 43% of people would say, I never listen to a podcast. 43% say that's just not, I don't do that. I'm not even sure what one is. I don't know how to get one. I don't care. 25% listen less than monthly to a podcast. So they would be somebody who'd listen maybe 6 to 10 times a year to something that's, and by podcast, I'm talking about pre-recorded, digitally delivered audio. I'm not thinking about Serial or about Joe Rogan or about some of the syndicated podcasts. I'm just talking about any digitally delivered audio. I'm calling that a podcast. Then 11% listen to a podcast at least once a month. 13% listen to a podcast at least weekly, and 9% are listening to podcasts daily. And the demographics of how this breaks out over to the right shows who's doing this. So men are more likely to listen to podcasts than women are, and millennials are the most likely to be listening to a podcast. Boomers aren't, and the silent generation is like, what's that again, a podcast? So that's how that all breaks down. Now here's, again, what's significant. You've got 20% of folks listening weekly to a podcast. That's not a small slice of the pie. That's a significant audience that you got to pay attention to as you think about your media mix. So here's what monthly podcast listening looks like. So this is how the curve goes. You go back to 2008, 9% were listening to podcasts at least once a month. You come 10 years into the future, it's now 26% of the audience that's listening. That's an estimated audience of 73 million people who are listening once a month to a podcast. Again, that's not an insignificant number. And as a ministry that wants to be reaching people, that's something you got to be attuned to as you go forward. Podcast stats, this is pretty interesting. How popular podcasts, how many listeners do they have? So the median podcast, look at that number at the top, 50% of podcasts get 142 downloads per episode. That's DPE. So there are as many above that line as there are below that line. So 142 is the median number of downloads per episode. The top 10 podcasts, if you've got more than 3,300 downloads per episode, you're in the top 10 of all podcasts in the world. That's a small number to put you into the top 10, right? And you go down to the top two, it's 19,000 downloads per episode. Top one, 32,000 downloads per episode. Just to put that in perspective, Family Life Today on terrestrial radio, our estimate of our audience is that we're reaching each day somewhere between 500,000 and 700,000 people. So if a top 1% podcast has 32,000 listeners, today's episode of Family Life Today has 500,000 listeners. That doesn't mean that's insignificant. It just means that the terrestrial radio hasn't gone away and is still the... As we look at who's listening to Family Life Today, 85% of the people who are listening to us today are listening via terrestrial radio, and somewhere between 10 and 15% are listening through the app, on their smartphone, or as a podcast download. That number's growing for us, but that's what the media landscape looks like today. The myth here is that the ideal length of an episode should be 22 minutes. We've been hearing about the short attention span of millennials for years, but here's the truth. 84% of podcasts that have more than 100,000 downloads per episode, that's the top echelon, are more than 51 minutes in length. Podcasts tend to go for an hour and a half, even 2 hour long podcasts. And everybody has been saying, you can't talk that long about something, millennials won't listen to it. Here's the truth, we all go to movies that are 3 hours long, and if they're really good movies, it's fine. As long as the content is compelling, the length is insignificant. You'll keep listening as long as it's engaging and compelling. So it's not the thing where you've got to keep it short if you want to get listeners. It's you got to keep it compelling if you want to get listeners. And then length comes along behind that. Here's a new technology that we're watching very carefully that is starting to emerge, and that is, go to the next one, it's smart speakers. So this is Alexa or Google Home, or I think there's a third one. Apple's got one. What is it? Yeah, see, nobody knows. Okay. So you've got Amazon Alexa and you've got Google Home as the two primary channels, but this is what's called a smart speaker, voice activated. Again, 20% of men are going to use one of those today, 15% of women. It's highest among millennials and Gen X, and we're watching this. It's one of those trends that's going forward. That's why in the last year, we have programmed so that you can train your Alexa device to say, Alexa, play Family Life Today, and today's episode comes up and you can listen to it. Because we want to be in every media channel we can be in with what we've got, practical biblical help and hope for marriages and families, as a way to reach the people we're trying to reach. So we're paying careful attention to smart speaker ownership. Now, I say all of that to say, and that really wraps up kind of the media landscape, but I say all of that to say, as a ministry, we are paying attention to what's happening with media. Go back to when I came, all you were thinking about was radio and TV. Today you're having to think about all the different channels that are available to you and how do you be in those channels and how do you be in those channels effectively and how do you utilize those strategically to accomplish your mission. And we're doing that so that, just as an example of that, in addition to the smart speaker technology and being available on the web and having an app for Family Life Today, next month we will be launching the Family Life Podcast Network, and we will have three brand new podcasts that we will be releasing as a series for listeners to connect with via podcast, in addition to being able to access Family Life Today as a podcast or Family Life This Week as a podcast. Ron Deal is developing Family Life Blended, a podcast. Kim Anthony, who is on crew staff with us, is developing a podcast called Unfavorable Odds, where she will be interviewing people who have stories of tragedy and adversity and struggle and how God brought them through it to triumph. So each podcast episode will be a new story where that's being unfolded. And then we're developing, Brian Goins is developing a podcast called Married with Benefits. And season one of Married with Benefits is all about questions every wife is asking. And it's a series of interviews with author Shanti Feldhahn about questions women ask about men and about marriage. These podcasts will be released and be promoted on Family Life Today as a way for us to engage with that 20% that I showed you who are listening to podcasts weekly, the people who, when they get in their car, instead of pushing a radio station button, they push their podcast list and say, what podcast do I want to listen to? We want to be in their channels and be providing them practical biblical help and hope for their marriage and their family in those channels. So it's a part of what we're doing. I'm going to ask Dave and Ann Wilson to come up here, and we're going to spend some time with them. We've talked about the transition that Family Life has made from Dennis Rainey to David Robbins as the president of Family Life, but as David said last night, Dennis agreed that he would continue on for more than a year as the host of Family Life Today while we determined what's our best strategic move going forward. And what we determined, and this is connected to David's vision to have a multi-generational, multi-ethnic stable of voices who are all talking about biblical marriage and family in all kinds of channels. He wanted to bring old friends, David, and old, old. I don't mean old. I don't
old,
mean old.
Are you saying old?
I mean, appreciate that, Bob.
Friends we've known for a long time.
Not as old as him.
That's right. Thanks for pointing that out. We wanted to bring folks who, talented, gifted, have been speaking in the marriage and family space for more than 30 years, have been speaking at Weekend to Remember Getaways for 30 years, who have just written the book Vertical Marriage, bring them in, and as we prayed and considered and thought about what's best for Family Life Today, this is where David said the best thing for us is to have this platform and have Dave and Ann fill it as we continue to look for podcast hosts and other platforms, other voices in other places. So it's a part of the strategy that we've got going forward. And we just, did I tell you guys last night, we just finished recording a bunch of Family Life Today this week.
Yeah.
So we're kind of operating on fumes a little bit this week because it's been a busy week. But Dave and Ann live in suburban Detroit. Went there 30 years ago to plant a church called Kensington Church that today has six campuses and 14,000 people coming to the church. Dave is one of the teaching pastors at the church. And your background with Family Life, You've been speaking for 30 years, but the background actually goes back to before you were married. Mm-hmm. And before we get to that, just give us, before you met one another, what was your story before you met Anne?
Oh, let's hear this. Make it good.
I knew the Barron family.
Yes.
Because her dad was my baseball coach, and her brother was my center. I was a quarterback. He was the center. So we were really close.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. We didn't run the shotgun back in the 70s. So I knew the family, and I came home between my junior year and senior year in college. We were 3 years separate, so never in high school together. And I was painting my high school baseball coach's house.
You're going to say this.
I remember I'm on the eaves, and I look down at Coach Key, and I go, "Hey, Coach Key, who's the hot chick at the high school right now?" He said, "Ann Barron." And I was like, she was a little kid when I left.
Yeah.
And then I walked out to the high school the next day. I was playing basketball there, just pickup ball, and she comes walking in the gym. And I'm telling you what, it was one of those, wow, she is a woman. It was awesome. It was awesome.
I don't know if you've ever said that part.
I can say it with this family here, right?
That's
can
nice
I say that with you?
Well, and here was my perspective. Dave was the big man in our hometown because he was this college quarterback. All the girls knew him.
There's like 30 people in our hometown.
I thought he was the most conceited, arrogant.
I was.
I'm like, this guy. And so I was a senior in high school, and he's playing basketball, and somebody runs up to me. I didn't grow up in the church. I gave Jesus my life when I was 16 years old, and Dave had this terrible reputation with girls, with partying, and so somebody comes up to
Thanks
me.
Thanks for sharing that.
Hey, this
she
is
She didn't
family.
Say bad. She said terrible.
It was terrible.
Like times 10.
We're in family. And so.
Oh, now you're going to use that against
so
me.
And so somebody goes up to me, and they go, "Did you hear that Dave Wilson became a Christian?" I'm like, "What? No way." So I go up to him, and I say that, like, "You became a Christian?"
That's exactly how she said it. Welcome to my marriage now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were dating other people at that point, but we ended up kind of talking and realizing, wow, this faith thing is really serious. And honestly, we were so attracted to the other person because we didn't know very many people in our hometown that were really strong spiritually.
I actually did know a single guy.
Yeah.
And Anne was the first woman I'd ever even been around that was on fire for Jesus. So we started dating, mm-hmm. and we're married in 9 months.
Yeah.
It was pretty quick. We don't recommend that, but that's how it went for us.
Yeah, and I was 19 and Dave was 22. That's even worse. There we go.
You grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And when you were, was it 6 years old?
6 years old, went to church with my mom and dad and two brothers and a sister and a little brother with me, and 10 years between those three and us two. Got baptized. I remember this, coming out of church, snow falling, Christmas Eve was just this glorious moment. Came home. While we were gone, Santa Claus had showed up, and my dad was an airline pilot and a lot of money. So big house, gated community, the whole place was full of Christmas presents.
Like and, more than you'd ever seen
oh,
before.
Oh, every inch of the family room, like times 10, and dad said, "Open them now." Like, no, Christmas tomorrow, open them now. So we ripped them open, it was a great night, woke up in the morning, and dad was gone. And so I'm like, "Where's dad?" And didn't know it till that day. That was all planned. He was leaving with his girlfriend. And that's why we had the Christmas Eve that night and there was big gifts there. And so, yeah, in 1963, there weren't a lot of divorces. I was the only kid in our elementary school in Ohio then. My mom then moved my brother and I to Ohio to where her parents were. You know, I'm looking back now, single mom, when there really weren't a lot of single moms at that time. And then my little brother died of leukemia about 8 weeks later. Mm-hmm. So that was my, you know, just mom and I growing up in this little town where we met in broken family. Yeah. And sort of mad at God for the brother dying and my dad leaving and just really blamed him the whole time. So sort of ran away from God in the church. Wasn't a part of church until my junior year in college.
And sports were big. You were a star quarterback in high school.
He was a big star.
Yeah. And went to Ball State, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had a chance to go in the Major League Baseball as a baseball player, but I was convinced I was a football player. this body is not a football body, but I, you know, went on a scholarship, and I thought that was great to be able to, you know, have your education paid for. And
you're in the Ball State Hall of Fame.
Several times.
Yes, there we go. I like this.
Oh, my gosh.
And you had records as a high school quarterback.
What are you doing, Bob? What are we talking about
here?
Oh, yeah,
this is the good one.
Records that stood for years until.
Oh, at the high school?
Yeah.
Yeah, guess who broke all my high school records? He's in the NFL right now. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. And he didn't just break them. He shattered them. I'm not kidding. I don't know what I had. Maybe 12 touchdown passes. He had 48 in one season and 6,000 yards.
You had 45s. He had LPs.
Yeah, there you go.
Records.
There you go.
Yeah,
right,
that's
okay.
True.
And you said you grew up in a family not church-going
at
all?
Not church-going. They were great people, moral people, but actually my sister became a Christian. We actually, to go back a little bit, my sister and I, she's 6 years older, and we started reading the Bible together when I was probably, I can't even remember how old I was, but she was still home, and we would read the New Testament, and we made this deal with one another, because I remember saying, I don't get it. Like, how do you get to heaven? I don't even understand this. And so we made a pact with one another. Whoever could figure that out first would come and tell the other person. So when I was 16 years old, she came home. We had both been abused sexually. She had been anorexic, bulimic. And when she came home this one time, I'm like, whoa, you look amazing. And she said, remember our pact? Like, I have found Jesus. And at this time, I was like, yeah, I'm not really into that now. I'm kind of into guys. And so, but she shared the gospel, and I gave my life to Jesus. And my dad came up to me when my sister came home that time, and he said, hey, your sister's kind of into this Jesus religious thing. She's weak and she needs that stuff, but you're strong like me, so don't get into that. Mm-hmm. Which was really interesting. That sister died when she was 44 of lung cancer. Mm. And I have never seen a person so strong.
Wow.
And my dad saw that, and that's what took him into faith.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your relationship with your dad, tell the two stories. Tell about when the baseball team.
He is going here now.
Yeah, I guess.
He's hearing all the stuff from radio.
Yeah. Tell about the day the baseball team was meeting at the house.
My dad's a baseball coach, and so he had a high school baseball team in the living room of our house.
I was not there that day.
Yeah, and I was probably 9 years old, and I had to walk through that room of this whole baseball team to get outside. And I did, you know, you're awkward, and I was kind of dressed up for something. But I remember walking through, and my dad stopped me in the middle of all these guys. And he said, hey, guys, I don't know if you know this. This is my daughter, Ann, and she'll be something when she starts to fill out her clothes.
Yeah.
And that just, that like, those things scar you as a young girl. Yeah, that's kind of where my dad was.
And then there was a second story when you came home after competing in gymnastics.
Yeah, I was a gymnast for 12 years, and
And she won't tell you this.
No, I'm not. Don't.
You're bragging on me. Olympic team came and said they will take your daughter at 9.
Wow.
And she'll be an Olympic gymnast. And her dad let her decide. Because it means you're leaving.
Yeah.
And Ann said, no. You made the right choice.
Look at us. Yeah, so I came home from one of my first big meets, and I did well at this national meet. And I was so excited. My dad was out. He was coaching with my older brothers, 9 years older. And I told my mom, I displayed my medals and my ribbons. And I said, make sure they come and wake me up so I can show them all of the stuff that I won. So mom, have them come in and wake me up. So they come in, they wake me up. And I said, did you see my medals? Did you see the trophy? And my brother and my dad both said this. And they said, we are the Barons. And unless you have a first place, don't come home. And so that just puts that performance-driven part in us. And so I carried that for a long time, too. So Bob's basically saying, you guys are so messed up, you'll be great on the radio.
Part of what I'm saying is we're all so messed up.
I know.
You guys have just decided at some point, and I asked you this earlier, was it a conscious decision, or did you just kind of happen into... We're not going to try to hide all of our junk. We're just going to be honest about it. Do you remember?
It's both. It was definitely conscience. When I started to get involved in the church, I thought it was really fake. And the people were fake. And I was like, wow, nobody here seems to have any struggles. Mm-hmm. And so when we started our church, I can remember the day I stood up on a stage and I talked about my struggle with pornography. It was 6 months in. And Steve, who started the church together, he walked over to me and goes, you just changed this church. This is going to be a different kind of church. And I go, why is that? He goes, you know what you did. And I go, I know. Hmm. And I hope that it is a place where people that struggle feel welcome and find the power of God. Here's one of our values at Kensington, and I hope it's a value as we bring this to radio. We call it our brokenness value. It's we recognize and reveal our brokenness to point to the power of the gospel or the power of God. So it's number one, you recognize, you don't deny it. It's like, wow, there's a lot of brokenness in here. You actually say it out loud. You reveal it. It's not like I'm going to hide it. No. I want to do this. I've never done this. I want to put this on the front door of our church. I want to put drop your mask here or no mask allowed or something. Because mm-hmm. It's always so often been fake. So, but it isn't just reveal your brokenness. No, it's what you guys said last night. When you're weak, you're so dependent on God. It's the point to the when I'm weak, then I'm strong. So I hope every broadcast, every sermon we ever do, people go, wow, they struggle like me, but whoa, there's a power of God that I don't know if I know in them and that they're experiencing. I had a guy at Hershey, a year ago, walk up right before the last session. I was standing right here getting ready, and he walks up and he goes, hey, rip these up. And I'm looking down at him like, what? He hands me his divorce papers. I hadn't talked to the guy all weekend, so it's Sunday, late morning. And I go, what are these? He goes, these are my divorce papers. So I jump off the stage. I go, wait. And the clock's at like 48 seconds. I got to start. And I go, and he told me the whole thing. He said, we came here last resort. He goes, you got to rip these up because we're not going to get divorced. And I go, no, you rip them up and give me some of them. I've got them in my backpack, a piece. But here's what I said. I asked him, what happened? He goes, we got here Friday night. You and Ann walked on the stage. And I went, oh, my gosh, they're like us. But throughout the weekend, I was like, they're not like us. They have something we don't have. And then yesterday, I figured it out. It's Jesus. And so we surrendered our life to Jesus last night in our hotel room, and we're going home with Jesus. And I'm like, that's the beauty of the gospel.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't that great?
That's it.
Over the last month, we have sent you, I think most of you have gotten two videos from us or a link to two videos. One is where Dennis reflects on the transition from being on Family Life Today to the handoff to Dave and Ann. We talked about it for 2 weeks with the Rainies and the Wilsons both on the air back at the end of February. And then we sent out a video in the last couple of weeks that introduces you to Dave and Ann.
When I didn't know the name of the Family Life Today?
Did you guys see that one?
If you haven't seen this video.
She didn't know what radio was called.
Like, what's it called again?
We started.
Family Life what?
She says, I'm so glad to be on Family Life Radio. And Dave says, no, it's Family Life Today. And she goes, oh, what's it called? Yeah, so it's. So
that was embarrassing.
Thanks for airing that too, Bob. That was nice of you.
Well, we use shame as a powerful tool. To try to correct behavior, so.
Because you knew I wouldn't forget it after that.
It works really well.
It does work well.
That's right. But in there, you hear their story. You came to a weekend to remember 2 weeks before you got married.
Yeah.
That's where you first understood God's design and plan for marriage.
Yep.
You joined the speaker team. You've shared the story of how Dennis said, looked at you and said, are you clean? And that was the only question he wanted to know is are you guys who you say you are? Is there any hidden sin? You said no. He said, let's do it. You've been speaking ever since. You had a blowout 6 months into your marriage that you looked at each other and said, it was the worst decision I'd ever made to be married to you. 10th anniversary, you said, I've lost my feelings for you. I mean, they're just...
We're the model couple.
It's all in the book. It's all in there.
But here's the thing. Who hasn't looked at each other and said, I wonder if we shouldn't have gotten married? Who hasn't had those moments in their marriage where you've had doubt or you've thought to yourself, this is not turning out the way I thought it was going to turn out? And
I know
you guys,
Mary Ann thought that.
Ann with us.
How do you know that she said... anyway...
I don't know, Bob.
Look, she's way nicer than I am. She probably didn't think that.
She probably did.
I'm the last question, and then we're going to just let you share with us from Vertical Marriage and some of what you've got for us today. But what do you think, if you hadn't started Kensington and if you hadn't been speaking for Family Life for the last 30 years, do you have any idea of where you think your relationship would be today if those things hadn't been central to what you were doing?
I'm not sure we would have made it.
I don't think we would have.
I really don't think we would. Obviously, I had no model.
I didn't either.
No understanding. Family Life, again, 2 weeks before we're married, and then ever since, has been the foundation of God's game plan for marriage. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I'd never read the Bible before. So, yeah, I mean, that saved our marriage
and
many
crew,
times over.
Crew really discipled us because we were on staff with Crew for 15 years. And Dennis and Barbara were the first couple. I remember we watched them speak and listened to them, and I remember we turned to each other and said, that's the kind of marriage we want. Mm-hmm. That's it. And so without the resources and the tools, I think by teaching it, it became who we were, and we learned more than anything, and we started applying it. So we really do feel like Family Life has changed our lives and our legacy.
Have you looked at each other and said, you're not my enemy?
Yes.
Yeah. Just like we have. I mean,
right.
You teach it and you go, that's really true. And we've got to keep reminding ourselves of those things. So you can see, listeners are going to love these guys. I love these guys. I'm glad to have the opportunity to work together with them going forward. And I'm excited about what chapter two of Family Life Today is going to look like as we move forward.
And I'll just say, Bob has been a huge gift to us he is the anchor us and listeners. Like, I think the listeners are like, oh, thank you that Bob's still there. And he's teaching us. We're growing. Hopefully we're learning. So he's amazing.
Yes. All right. Thanks.
Yes.